This is Mariners Magazine.
Swing, stock, way deep out to left field, catch the ball.
From foul pole to foul pole.
Reaches up, dives, and he makes the catch. Holy smokes!
A deeper look at your Seattle Mariners on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
It is that time of the week. Welcome, as always, inside Mariners Sunday Magazine. Glad you are with us.
Aaron Goldsmith alongside Gary Hill and Matt Harden running things for us. His first magazine in quite some time inside of our network studios. We are going to hear from a lot of terrific voices in the magazine today, Gary. And let's talk about one of the best that we will hear, the late, great Bob Robertson. Really, really sad news that we heard earlier in the week that Bob Robb, the College Football Hall of Famer and Cougar icon, passed away. Gary, I know this is somebody who you looked up to your entire life and later in life actually got to know fairly well and spent some time with.
Yeah, we lost a legend. This was a tough one, especially a kid like me who grew up in Tacoma. He was a voice of all seasons, whether it was Tacoma Tigers baseball or Tacoma Stars, or he did everything. Washington State Cougars, obviously, forever. So a couple years ago, I had a chance to sit down with him and just tell stories. And I have always been fascinated by the fact that he was the last broadcaster to do recreation games. He was doing it into the 90s with the Tigers, so he told some really great stories. We're going to hear some of those coming up as kind of a Bob celebration. Some stories are awfully funny. Like, you know, you do a game and then you see somebody in the grocery store the next morning. You have to explain that away. So just great stories, great times, and one of the true legends and truly one of the legendary people of this business, too.
Yeah, you're right. Terrific broadcaster, outstanding man. We hear an earlier conversation with you and Bob Robertson at the end of the program. Austin Shenton, Mariners third base product and local product as well, stops by the program. We will hear from Luis Clemente, the son of Roberto Clemente. We celebrated Roberto Clemente Day earlier in the week all around Major League Baseball. His son Luis was here a couple of years ago when the Mariners retired Edgar's number. Of course, Roberto means so much to Edgar Martinez. Luis made a trip to Seattle to be a part of that. So our conversation with Luis Clemente about his father and about Edgar as well. We hear from Dylan Moore, his guest with Shannon Dreher's guest on the Clubhouse Insider this week. But right now, we hand things over to the most recent episode recorded just a couple of days ago of the Wheelhouse Podcast with Jerry DePoto.
Jerry, the defense, even for a casual fan, is evident how improved the defense is this year than it was in 19. With obviously, it's easy to forget, even though it was just a year ago. I mean, the injury to Kyle Seager last year, the domino effect of that could be felt immediately, and anybody could see that coming to some extent. This year, Jerry, I mentioned earlier the first road trip maybe stands out as kind of a part of some turbulence for the Mariners defense, but man, since then, it has tightened up, and it's more than just not committing errors. What is it that you have been most pleased with when you take a look at how this Mariners team has stacked up defensively in 2020?
I think it's that we're not committing errors. I say that, and you just gave me the shivers when you recounted the Kyle Seager injury last year and the domino effect that took. And, you know, we lived through a fair bit of time in 2019 where it was a little bit of a carnival when a ball was hit, and it was at any number of positions on the field, and we were trying to find out about players, and we did, and we had a number of guys playing out of position, which was just unfair to them, and as a result, unfair to the result as we judged it. But this team is that we're dealing with in 2020. First, you know, just adding Evan White to any defensive scenario is a home run. He is as good a defensive first baseman as you're going to see, and really has shown that in his time here. But I guess as an anchor, I can't say enough about the maturation of J.P. Crawford and what he's done to it. Really, the position that's often identified as the most significant on the field defensively, he has really stabilized our middle infield defense, and it's made everybody better. The additions that we've made, the quality of what Dylan Moore brings defensively to any position on the field, what I think has been defensive improvement by Shed Long in a year where he's really struggled with the bat, he did get better defensively, and what we've done even behind the plate, whether it was Austin Nola or, you know, now Luis Torrens. And the guys who have stepped in, you know, the Joseph Odoms and Joe Hudsons, the catching has been so much better than it has been in general. And in the outfield, while we're trying a number of guys that have not played a lot of outfield in their careers, you know, whether that be now Shedd or what we saw from Sam Haggerty or Jose Marmolejos, they have done a remarkable job of learning on the fly. Credit to Perry Hill, who's coaching virtually, even though he's not here. Credit to Manny Acta. Credit to Joe Thurston. But most of all, credit to the fact that the programs that we implemented last year when Perry Hill joined our staff, you know, where we worked on defense religiously daily. From day one of spring training, we'll do it on Sundays in the big leagues, which is just unheard of in today's time. You know, and I guess the our crowning defensive, jewel would be that last year, in a year where we were nowhere near qualifying for the postseason, we were out. We went out and did our Sunday workout on the final day of the season and practiced defense before we went out to play the game. And it was not because we scheduled it that way as a staff. It was because our players asked for it. We've done it every other day. We're doing it today. And that's been the driving force. We're going to get better at defense. We are considerably more athletic with players who do have defensive chops to begin with. And they're just showing you what they can do at the big league level night in and night out because of good coaching, a belief that this is how winning happens, and their desire to work.
We want to do a deep dive on Dylan Moore on the podcast today because, I mean, his season has been really inspiring when you look at a guy who's had a kind of a windy road to get where he is now and had his first dip with the Mariners last year and now a chance to build on it this season. He had the injury, the wrist injury, which came at a horrible time when he was playing so well, and you wondered if he'd be able to regain some of that, what felt like kind of magic that he'd had before the injury. You know, for me, Jerry, Dylan was going to be the answer to the trivia question, who had the great catch in Felix's final start as a Mariner? Like, that was going to be Dylan Moore's legacy, right? When coming into this year, we hadn't seen a ton more on a consistent long-term basis, but he's showing now that he's been one of the best producers in a lineup that has had some really good stretches this year, and he's playing everywhere for you. And seeming to play, at worst, at an average level at the major leagues. What is it that Dylan Moore has impressed you so much about this year?
So, you know, I could go fairly deep on Dylan Moore, and probably will. You know, I'm not afraid. But with Dylan, following the 2018 season, when we decided we were going to go through this roster revamp, and one of the very first things we did was we identified undervalued players, and we went through an exercise in our front office, feel who are the players out there that are not on 40-man rosters that we can go out and access, you know, be it minor league free agents, waiver wire claims. Are there undervalued assets that we can, you know, be aggressive in trying to trade with other clubs to acquire? And, you know, that year Dylan Moore was coming off a really solid minor league season after what was really not a very solid 2017. You know, he really struggled in 17. He was a multiple-time minor league free agent after playing in the systems with the Texas Rangers, the Atlanta Braves, and ultimately the Milwaukee Brewers. We got very aggressive with Dylan because we saw what you just mentioned. We saw a really versatile player who had played a number of positions on the field, who we thought was an exceptional athlete, and we knew going into 2019 that we were going to have opportunity. So we had 40-man roster space, and we had opportunity, and we went out. At the time, he was a 26-year-old minor league free agent who'd not yet appeared in a major league game, and we threw a major league 40-man roster spot at him and asked if he was interested, and told him that there was a great opportunity, roughly nothing standing between him and an opening day spot as a utility player other than his own performance. And we brought him to spring training, and he was really impressive just in his athleticism. And as you know, last year he was hot and cold in terms of contact. You know, he'd go through long stretches where he's trying to figure out his swing. He has gone through a fairly significant, you know, adjustment with his swing over the last, let's call it, 3 years. And, you know, the one thing we could always count on is you could throw Demo out there at any position on the field, and he was going to give you above average defense. And then lo and behold, we threw him out here against Boston in that opening series, and he made like three errors in three plays. And you felt terrible for him, because we all think he's an exceptionally good defensive player. Flash forward to 2020, he comes into spring training in the best shape of his life, because
absolutely
that's what players do. And he truly did. He went home. He got stronger. He made his swing even more efficient. There is not a lot of wasted space in Dylan's swing, and he has real power. And that was evident last year, even in bursts. He has real power to every part of the field. And, you know, when this season started, we thought he'd do the same thing, just move him around the field, take advantage of the versatility. And about a week into to summer camp, when we were still, you know, minus Dylan, he was obviously, you know, out with COVID, we were wondering, you know, what the result was going to be when he came back. You know, is he going to be back on the field? Is he going to catch up quickly? And about a week into our regular season games, you know, after it was very clear that he didn't miss a beat and he was doing the same things that we had seen him do in Peoria, and that we believed him capable of doing, Justin Hollander, our assistant general manager, was sitting with me one day watching a game, and he said, "Dylan Moore, our bringer of rain." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's 2012 Josh Donaldson to the Oakland A's. That is our Dylan Moore." And really, he has been that good this year. He's something north of 100 plate appearances. I think he's about a buck and a quarter now, or thereabouts. He's got a 150 weighted runs created plus. His exit velocity, his hard hit rates, his slugging percentage, every measure that you can look under the hood to try to determine the legitimacy of a breakout like this, every one of those measures points in the direction of, yes, this is legitimate. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting it at a great angle. He's showing you a power and speed combo that's very real. And all of the data under the hood suggests this is real. And it's happening now over enough of a plate appearance sample to really take it seriously, especially when you're talking about an athlete who you could put at any position on the field and he plays above average defense. We're thrilled with his development, and it's made this season so much more fun to watch.
That was Jerry DePoto and the latest episode of the Wheelhouse Podcast, episode number 66, in fact. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. Well, we enjoyed talking to Jerry about Dylan Moore, who's had a breakout campaign in 2020. When we come back, we hear from Dylan Moore alongside Shannon Dreher. That's right after this timeout on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
This is Mariners Magazine,
your inside connection to Seattle Mariners baseball
on the Mariners Radio Network.
Welcome back inside Mariners Sunday Magazine. Dylan Moore has had a phenomenal 2020 campaign, a brief stint on the injured list, but man, that did not slow him down at all since he has come back. Earlier this week, he had a chance to sit down and talk things over with Shannon Dreher, where Dylan starts off talking about his productive offseason.
I just wanted to get better overall. I know that's a lot of people's goal over the offseason. I wanted to be able to kind of learn from what I did, learn from my first experiences, because last year was a lot of firsts, obviously being a rookie. And I wanted to learn from those situations, offensively, defensively, coming off the bench, starting different stuff like that, and kind of hone into who I am as a player and just be more consistent at the plate.
Let's take it back even further. Where would you say was your most instrumental area of growth coming up through the minors?
I think one of my major growths was in AAA when I started to play more positions. My first full season with the Rangers in low A was actually at first base. So I got a lot of first base, and I moved around the infield there with them. And then I kind of was only a shortstop the next couple of years. And then I realized that my value could really go higher with being able to play multiple positions. And so I kind of put my mind towards that, being able to be an average to above average defensive player in at multiple positions would get me more opportunities at the plate and more opportunities to play if you know, somebody like Skip or other managers can see me as not a liability in the defense defensively. And so I kind of just went with that. I wanted to work my hardest and learn from all the people who are teaching me, you know, outfield and infield. And
are you the same person at the plate now as you were then?
I think I'm just more aware of what I'm doing. I think growing up playing baseball, you kind of just go out there and you play, right? And you're not really sure what's going on with your swing. You're just having a good time. But over time, with all the video and all the analytics and stuff like that, I've been able to kind of connect my feels with what I see. in my swing, and I'm a little bit more direct to the ball, not swinging and missing as much, which was a problem last year. And putting more balls in play means more opportunity for hits. And I've also gotten a little bit stronger, and I knew that if I increased my consistency of solid contact with more weight behind it, the ball would go farther because I would be hitting it more often and solid on the bat.
Okay, a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the swing and miss. How did you use technology in improving there?
That actually wasn't so much technology. It was just last year swinging and missing a ton at fastballs in the zone. And so I kind of just – I worked with D a lot, who doesn't swing and miss a lot. And, you know, we kind of just worked on point of contact stuff and being a little more direct to the baseball and setting my body in a position to where I can recognize and be on time for a fastball. I was late a lot last year, which caused me to be under the ball and missing him. And
okay, you said work with D Gordon?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And how did that happen?
We're neighbors down there in Orlando, and he's got a little nice little setup there, and we were able to, during the time off that we had between spring training and summer camp, we were able to work together and get a lot of stuff done. And yeah, I knew that kind of, I don't want to hit exactly like D, and D doesn't want to hit exactly like me. Obviously, we're a little bit of a different player, but I knew that I was wanted to go in a little more direction, a little less launch angle, a little more direct to the ball, and I knew that he was the guy to do that. He obviously, he's been a great player for a long time, and I was lucky enough to be able to work with him.
With kind of being able to make the more solid contact right now, has your approach changed at all?
It's probably more, it's a little bit more aggressive, I would say, as opposed to last year, which kind of, I'm more confident as a hitter, which makes me more aggressive. I knew that I was taking a lot of pitches as well last year, probably because I wasn't as confident, because I wasn't hitting the ball as much as I should have. So I kind of flipped that a little bit. So I'm definitely a little more confident. I'm a little bit more aggressive. As opposed to last year when I was swinging foul balls off, I've been swinging and putting the ball in play. So the at-bats are a little bit shorter. But as long as they get in play and I'm hitting it hard, they're going to be hits and they're going to be productive at-bats. And so that's what I was looking for.
I've also seen you running quite a bit. So what's it like to kind of have, it looks like they're really encouraging the base running and the base stealing right now. For those who can do it, go. Is this something that's going to be a solid part of this team going forward?
I think so. I think it should be. We're getting good at it, and we're still learning. Obviously, we got a young group, but we got some guys who've done it for a long time, and they help a lot. And we're younger, we're athletic, and it would be remiss for us to not use that in the game and to put pressure on defense in different ways. We saw it with how it affected us with Texas did it a couple games there and got some free runs out of that. And so we know it could be effective for us, and it could put added pressure on teams with the better defense that we're playing and the more runs we're scoring now. I think that can put, you know, having runners in motion, being worried about the runners on the bases for the pitcher as well can make him, you know, not throw a quality pitch in a situation that we could take advantage of.
Last question for you, Dylan. I know you've just got the 1 year in the big leagues, but you've got a lot of experience, and you've taken from that from everywhere you've been. So I think you're a good person to speak to this. What do you see when you look around your clubhouse right now? Who is this group?
Man, this group is – we're kind of developing an identity, I think, as a group. We're young. You know, we've been young. We've been saying that since last year at the end. But we're kind of developing, you know, everyone's they're kind of finding their little niche. Everyone's helping each other out. I mean, as a group, we're just out here playing ball. You know, there's not too much pressure on us right now. You know, we're just trying to go out there and have fun and win games. And that's the beauty of it. You can look up at the end of the year and say, hey, we made it, or hey, we didn't make it. And hopefully in the next few years, we continue the growth and the maturation of us as a group. And you know, there's different guys coming in, and, you know, they work well with us and with the kind of the core of the leadership group, and then the guys outside coming in, and kind of it's like a well-oiled machine, I think, at this point, and we kind of can keep it going on the right track.
Our thanks to Dylan Moore having a wonderful 2020 campaign. Brought to you by our friends at Jack's Grill with three locations in Issaquah, West Seattle, and Laurelhurst. Jack's is open for lunch Tuesday through Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning, or brunch at 9 o'clock in the morning, Saturday and Sunday, and every night of the week for the greatest steaks in town. That's J-A-K apostrophe S, Jack's Grill. When we come back, we celebrate Roberto Clemente Day earlier in the week. Well, Luis Clemente was here at the ballpark a number of years ago when the Mariners retired Edgar Martinez's number 11 here inside T-Mobile Park. And Roberto's son, Luis, came by because Edgar had such a fond affection for Roberto Clemente, of course, being from Puerto Rico. Our conversation with the son of a legend, Luis Clemente, straight ahead on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
You're listening to Mariners Magazine.
Your inside connection to Seattle Mariners baseball.
On the Mariners Radio Network.
It is hard to believe that a dream that started when I was about 10 years old will take me on an amazing journey. Since the first time I saw Roberto Clemente on TV and some highlights in the World Series, I was hooked on the game of baseball. All I wanted to do was play the game. And like most kids in Puerto Rico, I wanted to be like Roberto Clemente. What a great example Roberto Clemente was to all of us in Puerto Rico. And what an honor to have my plaque in the hole alongside with his.
Here's Edgar Martinez now with two on and nobody down here in the seventh inning. And Edgar sends a line drive down the left field line, base hit into the corner. So it's going to score one. Guillen Vasquez to third base. They will hold him there on a double by Edgar Martinez. Edgar Martinez now with 441 doubles. And he has broken the tie with the great Roberto Clemente. So he has more doubles than any man in the history from Puerto Rico.
Well, this was a very special week around Major League Baseball as we celebrated Roberto Clemente Day. And as you heard and as you know, Edgar Martinez had such a fond affection for Roberto Clemente, both being from Puerto Rico. When Edgar's number 11 was retired here at the ballpark in 2017, Luis Clemente came by to pay his respects to Edgar, and he was kind enough to spend some time with us up here in the booth. Luis Clemente, the son of Vera, and, of course, the great Roberto Clemente, the president of the Roberto Clemente Foundation. First of all, Luis, it is such an honor and a privilege to have you in our great ballpark on a day where we honor one of the greatest hitters of all time and someone you're very close with, Edgar Martinez. First of all, thanks for being here.
Aaron, it's great to be back. First time I came here was in 2001, and I had the honor of having my son, my second son, Robbie, christened the All-Star Game by running the bases. And the most impressive thing that happened was at one point I hear the crowd just a big roar, and everyone's getting up. And when I look at the big screen, they had Dad's image running side by side with him. It was the most impressive thing. So it's so awesome to be back in Seattle, definitely, especially for Edgar.
Oh, my goodness, what a fantastic memory. Thanks for sharing that. It is amazing that a young boy pretending to be your father in the backyard in Puerto Rico would go on to have this magnificent nearly two-decade-long career with one team in one city, would go on to win the award named after your father for his off-the-charts humanitarian work that, of course, Edgar carried that torch during his career and beyond. It really is pretty amazing when you think about it, both coming from the tiny land of Puerto Rico.
Absolutely. I think what Dad did, he opened the doors for those to follow, and Edgar just rolled that wave, you know, and he did it perfectly. And like I say, you know, I think that Dad, in his short career, in his short life, he died at 38. It's amazing the impact he had on people, and thank God that Edgar picked up on that and took it to the next level.
Your dynamic with your father is so unique. Of course, you're just a young boy when he tragically passed away. What are some of the stories? Is there a story or two that stands out to you during your travels, your journeys around Major League Baseball, of people who knew your father better than you sadly had the chance to know him, about your dad?
You know, there's, if you listen to people speak, you would think that was not even human. You know, there's nothing negative. There's nothing, you know, it's like they're talking about a saint. It's like they're talking about sacredness. And, you know, I said, but he was human. You know, there had to be something he had to do that, you know, made him human, right? And they says, oh, you will not understand. But Dad, I think the most impressive thing to me is how he impacted people So, you know, many stories. I've had people who, while others are asking for my autograph or a picture, I had this lady in Pittsburgh that she said, all I want is a hug. And when we hugged, it was, we kept getting tighter and tighter, and it was like I felt that really giving her that hug, and she felt it too. And she was, I was in tears, she was in tears. No words had to be spoken. I mean, it's amazing. That impact is still so strong today.
Luis, my goodness, you look like $1 million. It's so good to have you here in the ballpark. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks. Great to be back in Seattle.
No, that was a real treat and a real honor to talk with Luis Clemente, the son of Roberto Clemente, when he was in town for Edgar's number retirement ceremony. Our thanks to Luis for being a part of the magazine today.
And that was brought to you by our friends at Jack's Grill with three locations in Issaquah, West Seattle, and Laurelhurst. Jack's is open for lunch Tuesday through Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning, or brunch at 9 o'clock in the morning, Saturday and Sunday, and every night of the week for the greatest steaks in town. That's JAK'S, Jack's Grill.
When we come back, we talk things over with Mariners third base prospect Austin Shenton, a local guy. That's straight ahead on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
Mariners Magazine.
Your inside connection to Seattle Mariners baseball.
On the Mariners Radio Network.
Welcome back inside Mariners Sunday Magazine, brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and Silverado HD. Austin Shenton is a Bellingham guy, grew up a Mariners fan, huge Ichiro fan, Felix as well, and now he is in the Mariners organization. He was drafted by the Mariners, played in the system last year, and now is in Tacoma at the alternate training site. And man, did we have a fun time talking with Austin Shenton.
Austin, it's great to spend a little time with you. We talked a couple of months ago at this point, before maybe in the early days of summer camp, and now the alternate site is up and running. Things are becoming more regular, more regimented. Can you tell us what life in Tacoma is like for you these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple, honestly. I mean, we just kind of come to the ballpark at around 7:30 in the morning and get to work just like any other normal person. So, it's been good, though. The schedule can kind of get monotonous, but, you know, you just got to kind of persevere through it and just kind of realize that this is a great opportunity being here. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun being around our player development staff and just, you know, learning the fundamentals that we're trying to teach, and really just trying to hone in parts of my game that I've been wanting to improve upon. So it's been good to get out here and get the reps and be close to home.
I have been very anxious to ask you about something. As a kid growing up in Tacoma, I went to a million games at Cheney Stadium. I worked there. I've been there a million times. My high school field was, our home field was right down the street. So I know the dimensions there very well. I cannot picture a ball sailing over the center field wall. Describe what that was like to actually hit a home run over the center field wall at Cheney Stadium.
I think it was just surprising, honestly, because I don't know. I think McKay, one of the first days we were here, Andy McKay, he said, I don't know if anyone's ever gone over center field in the game. And I was like, seriously, that seems kind of crazy. And then when I hit it, I didn't really think, you know, it was kind of a historic home run. I was just like, okay, thank goodness I barreled up a baseball, you know, it felt good. And then as I kind of rounded first, I just, you know, was expecting to hear either a bounce, you know, off the warning track or the wall, and nothing came. And then Braden Bishop, I looked at him and he turned around without a ball, and I was like, okay. And I just kept running, tried to act like I, you know, knew it was out all the way. So, but yeah, it was pretty cool. And it was also fun to do it off my boy George Kirby. So, you know, got to have some friendly banter in our, because I give him rides to the field. So you know, we gotta hang out and talk about that one.
It's over 30 feet tall, 425 to center.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a joke.
It's a joke.
Hey, since you know George pretty well, you got to tell us about this guy, because he's obviously highly regarded, first round pick by the Mariners. He never walks anybody, but I did hear he walked the batter after you hit the home run. Do you remember? Is that correct?
Yeah, he walked two straight guys. I think honestly, he was more disappointed about the two walks than about getting the home run off me. But, you know, asking me to speak upon George Kirby, I mean, he's a great pitcher. I mean, I only watched him pitch a couple of times in Everett, but you know, just the way his mannerisms on the mound, you know, he just has the utmost confidence in himself, and he should. And, you know, he just pounds the zone. He trusts his stuff. And, you know, I've told him this a few times. I really don't understand how he got picked so late. Because I don't know what pick he was, but 23rd, 24th, whatever it was. I mean, I just can't. He's to me the best pitcher in that draft class, you know, and he has really great stuff. And I think he's going to be a really key piece for this team, this franchise, and in the future.
20th overall in 2019.
Yeah.
And I hear from, and he's going in shorter stints, or at least he was earlier, and in shorter stints at the alternate site, he's pumping 97 to 99 miles an hour with the command, is what the reports that we were getting in Seattle.
Yeah, and that's correct. Yeah, it's
those are accurate.
You know, I got lucky. I closed my eyes and caught it. So, he's a great guy, and you know, his stuff really plays.
Hey, we need to find a little bit out about yourself when you're not at the ballpark. Obviously, times are very different right now. But is there anything that you've been able to do to take your mind off of baseball and take your mind off of the oddity of 2020 when you're not working out and playing ball?
Yeah, well, I got into cycling during quarantine, so just bike riding and that kind of stuff. And I've always been into photography, so, you know, I do that in my spare time as well. And then also I like to cook, so I've been cooking a good amount. And then, I don't know, in quarantine I started doing some stuff. You know, I built like – or in the process of building, I came here, so I was building a tiny home though. So, you know, started doing that. So I like to keep myself busy doing a bunch of different things. But yeah, you can catch me on the golf course a lot too. That I'll be golfing a lot. I've been going probably 3-4 times a week down here. So I don't like sitting in the hotel room looking up at the sky, looking up at the ceiling. So, you know, got to find something to pass the time.
Well, there's way too much to follow up on here, but I'm going to go with the low hanging fruit of the tiny home. I can guarantee you, Austin, you're the only professional baseball player who is building a tiny home. Tell me, first of all, what was your inspiration to do this?
I mean, if you ask my mom, I've always been like, I was one of the smallest room in the house. You know, I kind of try to be like a minimalist, and I don't really like having a bunch of stuff. So I just want to kind of live with less. And also I kind of wanted a little spot where, you know, I wasn't sharing a wall with my parents at the age of 23. No offense to them, but I kind of wanted to, you know, branch out and have my own spot, but be close enough. So our backyard is like 85, 90 yards. So I can be in the back left corner, got my little tiny home, and I'll be good. I'll be posted up out there.
How far along in the process are we?
Basically everything with the exterior is pretty much finished. I just have to put siding up, but the interior is pretty raw. You know, we got to put up electrical, plumbing. I'm just having running water. I got a compostable toilet. So there's no septic. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, but I've kind of like designed the whole thing. I'm really into like that kind of stuff, like interior design type stuff. So I bought most of the stuff. So it just needs to be all put together.
Now, Gary can relate to this. I can't tell you how many, probably at this point, Gary, hundreds of guys we've talked to over the years. No. You just dropped a compostable toilet on us. Okay. So this is like a whole new stratosphere of a guy. Yeah. Where did you learn how to do construction, build things?
One of my best friends worked in construction, and then my uncle was a carpenter his whole entire life. So it was basically us three, and then my dad would sometimes help. My dad did most of the roof because I was afraid of heights, and I'm not getting up there.
It's a tiny home. What are you talking about?
Hey, it's kind of tall, though. At the tallest point, it's like 12 feet. So yeah, it's not, I mean, 12 feet looking down, it can look high, man. Let me tell you.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah, it was a process. And I honestly, I suffered an injury during the tiny home too. I didn't want to say this, but I got knocked with a 2x4 in my nose. So I got a nose job. You know, I don't know if you guys can tell, but.
No, you didn't.
No, well, it was crooked. So I had to get it popped back in surgically. So he said he tightened it up a little bit. So theoretically, I got a nose job. With the tiny home. not intentional, but yeah.
Well, it looks great.
So. Yeah, we're recording this on video conference call. Your nose looks fantastic, Austin.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate it. It's expensive. it added to the cost of the tiny home. Unintentional cost. But
since you are playing the position of one of the greatest Mariners in franchise history, and Kyle Seager, you've been watching Kyle from the time when you were, can we say a kid? I mean, you were a young man until now you're within the same organization that he plays. What is it that you like the most watching Kyle Seager play?
It's how even keeled he is, I guess. I think that's the most, I mean, he's just solid. You know, he goes out and I don't know, you can just see the confidence he plays with. I love when players are confident. Like it just, you can just see it. Like when he's in the box, he just, yeah, he doesn't have, he's blank face, you know, just, you know, I got this, you know, and just how smooth he is, you know, fundamentally sound. I mean, getting to meet him, you know, he's just a great guy, you know, great teammate. So it's been awesome getting to watch him and try to emulate what he does, you know, because I mean, he's been a great Mariner and I've watched him, I guess now it's since I was like 14. And so like when you're like 13, 14, you start like, you know, really watching people and, you know, knowing what you're watching, you know, not just being like, oh, he's great, you know, knowing how he goes about his business, how he looks, you know, how he looks when he steps into the box, his approach, you know, that kind of things. And, you know, I'd go to Safeco and I just, you know, kind of watch him at third base and be like, okay, like, you know, I want to be in his shoes someday, hopefully, you know, and I want to do things how he does it. You know, because he does things the right way. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun watching him.
So you're a big Ichiro fan growing up too, right? You have to tell us the story of meeting Ichiro at spring training. I mean, you're at Mariners camp. You're wearing the uniform. You see Ichiro. What was that moment like meeting Ichiro?
Yeah, it was kind of funny because there's like those black screens on the sides of the fences. And so I couldn't see around the corner. So I'm walking onto the field and like I turn the corner and right as I turn the corner, I was kind of looking down and then I look up and I'm staring Ichiro into the face like, oh my gosh, what a, like, I don't really know what to say. So I just stuck out my hand. I was like, hey, Ichiro, nice to meet you. And he's like, I said, hey, nice to meet you. And then he said, Ichiro, nice to meet you as well. And I was like, man, come on. There's no planet that you needed to say your name. Like, I don't know. It was awesome though. I kind of got fangirled so hard. Some of my teammates were like, hey, Austin, you need to calm down, bud. I was like, I know, man. But I think I would be the same way if I met King Felix because, oh my gosh, watching him growing up, that was my guy growing up. He was the same time, you know, 13, 14. And man, like, I was a huge King Felix fan. Went to like King Court, Supreme Court, you know, because the environment when he was pitching and when he was dealing, I mean, there's nothing like it, you know, because the city of Seattle, there's a lot of fans and, you know, it's a good fan base. But when we have like, you know, a little bit of wins in the win column and, you know, that environment starts to go, it really is awesome. And everyone loved that guy.
Awesome, man. We could talk to you forever. This has been awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with us for a little bit. We know you got a lot of work to do, but we appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
How great was that? Our thanks to Mariners third base prospect Austin Shenton. You can catch the full version of that conversation on the Mariners official baseball podcast. You can find it wherever you find your podcast. You can also follow it on Twitter at Mariners Pod to be notified each time a new episode is released. When we come back, we hear from Gary Hill, who talks with a legend who sadly just passed away, the great Bob Robertson. Conversation from yesteryear with the Cougar icon. That's straight ahead on the Alaska Airlines Mariners Radio Network.
Now back to Mariners Magazine.
Your inside connection to Seattle Mariners baseball.
On the Mariners Radio Network.
Martinez ready at the plate. David Valley is on deck. Runners lead now. Parrish at third base, Buehner at second. Here's the pitch and a line drive up the middle into center field. That's a base hit. Parrish scores. Buehner to third. They'll hold him there. The throw cut off.
at the mound by Pagliarulo. 6-5 as the Mariners come right back here in the last half of the third inning. A line drive single to center field by Kino Martinez, a run batted in his 48th of the year. Parrish scored, Buehner to third. And now Dave Valle to the plate.
Now the voice of a legend, the late great Bob Robertson, Aaron Goldsmith, and Gary Hill. And Gary, the Northwest lost an icon earlier this week.
Yeah, it was a sad day. Just one of the best there's ever been, one of the best there'll ever be. And whether you're a Cougar fan or growing up in Tacoma, listen to everything he did. I mean, he was the best. Great person off the field, and a great person in the broadcast booth. Such a legend.
A 12-time Washington Sportscaster of the Year winner, College Football Hall of Famer. And it was a while back that Gary had a chance to sit down with the legendary Bob Robertson, talking specifically about his recreations back in the day.
And it's time now for another edition of Voices of the Game. And today we get to visit with an absolute broadcasting legend in the Pacific Northwest.
I would remind you to always be a good sport. Be a good sport, always.
That's right, the great Bob Robertson. Of course, the longtime voice of the Washington State Cougars and many, many years broadcasting baseball games for the Tacoma franchise and the Pacific Coast League. In fact, Bob Robertson received a great deal of national attention for being the last known broadcaster to recreate ball games.
And sorry, when I came here, it was still recreation. Was still how you did the road games. It was too expensive for a local station to have a broadcaster out on the road, having to hire somebody to back him up to pay him, and you've got his expenses on the road. And so it was recreate, and I recreated then here through a number of different names, different teams.
A skill that was commonplace in the early days of baseball broadcasting, but Bob Robertson continued recreating road games into the 1990s.
It was kind of fun doing the recreations. The real score in it was trying to fool people who were listening. I know that sounds horrible. I had a radio audience out there, and every night I'm sitting at a microphone trying to fool them. I would run into, this actually happened a couple of times, a supermarket. I'd run into somebody in the supermarket who had heard the game the night before. I said, "Well, did you come in this morning? Because you come from Edmonton this morning."
So, can you tell the difference?
Scott Brosius will lead off for the Tigers against right-hander Jeff Bittiger here in the second inning of the contest. Nelson Simmons and Dan Howitt will follow for Tacoma. No score in the ball game. Tigers and Colorado Springs. Here is Brosius, right-hand batter, Portland, Oregon native to the plate. Tigers third baseman, and has done just a super job defensively at third base. I don't think anybody plays third base any better anywhere than Scotty Brosius has been doing it for the last couple of months. Right-hand batter, open stance, feet fairly wide apart. Here comes the pitch to him, and a fastball is inside. He leans away and takes that ball one. Jeff Bittiger with a 5-7 record of 4.00 earned run average on the mound. Bittiger ready again. Here comes the delivery, and a ground ball back up the middle, shortstop after the ball, can't get it, it's by him into center field for a base hit. Scott Brosius grounds that ball right back up the middle, almost over the bag, and Keith Smith, the shortstop, gave it a good try, but couldn't get to it. Brosius on at first base with a single. Tigers have their first hit of the ball game, and a leadoff runner aboard here in the second inning for Nelson Simmons coming to the plate.
That's from an actual broadcast of the Tacoma Tigers taking on Colorado Springs, recreated by Bob Robertson.
I went to spring training with the team and recorded just stood by the batting cage and made recordings of ball hitting, bat, and such as that. So I had a pretty good collection. I had jet airplanes flying over ballparks and all kinds of things like that, which of course now no longer have any use because I don't recreate anymore. But we had them and we did them.
The pitch and a fly ball back to right field. There goes Kirby back. Let her go. It's going, going. It is gone for a home run. Ron Whitmire, a high fly ball home run back over the right field wall, and the Tigers add a run to their lead. It is a 6-0 ball game as Whitmire hits home run number 10. And the Tigers, with two out here in the seventh inning, have made it a 6-0 ball game.
The reporter there would give the information at the end of the inning, or as it was going, however he did it. And he would give our person there the information, and he would tell the guy with the ticker, and he would message it to Tacoma, and the receiving guy would paste it up, and you've seen the old telegram with the strip, and it's all pasted in it. Well, that's how we would get it, and we would have told them that we want to get the lineups to start. Mm-hmm. And then we want to, following through on that, we want to know when each batter comes up and what he does and who the pitcher is. We didn't go so far as to ask him to tell us what the pitches were, curveballs, or, you know, we didn't go that far. That was left to my vivid imagination. Yeah. And so then the person at my end, the receiving end, would bring this pasted up or typed up, as it became later, to me in the booth at the radio station or wherever.
1-1 count. The pitch and a line drive over the third baseman's head down the line. That's in there for a base hit. Extra bases. It'll roll back into the corner. Brocious around first on his way to second. Allred up with the ball. The throw comes in toward third base to the shortstop, Keith Smith. And Brocious with a stand-up double, his third hit, his second double, is on at second base. And the Tiger bats are ringing now in this ball game.
My wife managed to have a ball game canceled once. It was a series in Hawaii. We used to play 8-game series out there, and we go out and play. And they took one of the weekend series over to the Big Island. Mm. It's from Honolulu, and we were doing the recreation, and. We first of all, we had a couple of rain delays. You can imagine on a big island in Hawaii in the evening. Bring your raincoat.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of rain delays, and it was a long game. Stan Nakarado used to, he'd be home. Mm-hmm. But he knew that we were running 15 to 30 minutes behind the actual game. You had to, because you had to let the material stack up on you. So what he would do, he would call Joanne and ask her, how's the game going? And he was the general manager, she didn't have any problem with that. So she'd tell him what the score was and what the inning was and who's up, and then, okay. And pretty soon he'd call back again, he'd do that. So this one time from the Big Island, we got the first game in, and we've got the break between games now, and Stan calls, and I'm still finishing up the first game, and Stan calls to see how it's going, and Joanne decided that this this is ridiculous, and she told him, she said, Stan, she said, nobody's listening to the game, there's nobody out there, we're looking at getting the game started at almost 4:00 in the morning, and there's nobody here going to listen to it. Yeah, and while that game is going on and nobody's listening, my husband is sitting in there in that studio trying to make it sound like a real baseball game. And she says, I don't think you ought to do it. It's a waste of time. And he thought about it. You're right. We packed up and went home.
There it is. The great Bob Robertson.
We go to the top half of the second inning at Sky Sox Stadium in Colorado Springs. Bob Robertson on your Tacoma Tigers Baseball Network, KLAY Lakewood Tacoma, KJUN Puyallup Tacoma.
And what a wonderful piece. And the Northwest lost an absolute legend and the great Bob Robertson. Gary, thank you for doing that. And, man, when you sat down with him in his home, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked for a couple of hours, just story after story. And his grandson, too, thanks to him, that's how we have all the play-by-play as well. I was listening to a recreation of a Tacoma Stars broadcast the other day, too, which recreating soccer, I mean, baseball's one thing, recreating soccer is a whole other thing, but having that play-by-play is amazing, and what great stories. Oh.
Well, him getting flagged down in the grocery
store. Isn't that the best?
Very good.
Weren't you in Edmonton yesterday?
Which is a real compliment to how good of a job he did.
Absolutely.
I would say. Thank you for doing that, Gary. That was just wonderful. What a fine way to end this week's Mariners Sunday Magazine. We've got Shannon Dreher coming up with the pregame show. Mariners have Justin Dunn up on the mound today looking for a series win. in the desert. Big thanks to all who contributed to the magazine today. We heard from a lot of terrific voices. So much of what you hear each week, of course, on Mariners Sunday Magazine, you can catch in the days to follow on the Mariners official baseball podcast. You can find it at mariners.com. Follow it at Mariners Pod on Twitter or wherever you listen to your podcast. So for Matt Harden, for Gary Hill, I'm Aaron Goldsmith. Thanks for tuning in.